This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We got them right where we want them.
Primetime on Football Friday.
No one comes into our house and pushes us around.
1080 The Fan.
How you play today from this moment on is how you will be remembered.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make The Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Football Friday with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
There will not be a true Isaac Rop what it do this fine Football Friday.
No, but I will give you a ahoy, good sir.
Ooh, that was very calm, too. Can you give me a little bit of a higher good one?
No, I'm not here to perform for
ahoy,
you.
Ahoy, ahoy, ahoy! Well, the drop will do it for you, then.
I'm some sort of dancing animal here for your amusement, Michael.
Yes, you are.
Oh, that's probably true.
Well, it's also
ahoy!
Thank you.
There you go.
It was also for the listeners, too. It's not for me. You just went, ahoy, good sir.
I'm here for you. Well, it was very subdued. Normally, I'm used to coming in and Rob's energy, and you came
what
in.
What it do?
Yeah, you came in with a very bleh.
Oh, come on. I just didn't. I don't like to step on Rob's toes when I do these shows. I don't want to do a really energetic what it do type of open because that's his thing.
Well, Rob stole it from someone else. He stole it from Kevin. Kevin stole it from someone. Everything's stealing someone from something.
Stealing someone from something?
Yeah, stealing something from someone. How about we flip that?
Yes, yes.
There you go.
But yeah, Rob's out today. He's in Vegas, I believe, this week, making big money bets on sports.
I think he's doing Vegas and Palm Springs. I think he's got a whole thing.
All in one weekend, huh?
Yeah, he's globetrotting. I think he's down in Vegas for a day, and then I think his wife's in Palm Springs. I think he had a friend that was in Vegas and a wife in Palm Springs, so I think he's hitting the triangle.
Right, and as we've talked about with Rob before, the vacation without the wife when she could be on vacation with you is something that he does all the time.
Well,
that we have found very strange.
It is. They vacation separately. They can go out together, but she'll go home and it's a whole thing. I don't fully understand, but they've been together for, I mean, God, like 20 years. So who am I to question it?
Yeah, it must be working.
Yeah.
Right. I couldn't imagine doing that outside. I guess I did it this year when I went to Caribbean Island, Turks and Caicos for a wedding, but that was because my wife couldn't come.
Huh.
Not because she didn't want to come. She just had a business thing going on. So I went by myself with some friends to that. It was weird. It was nice, but it was weird.
I vacation by myself all the time with the kids, but that's, again, just
simply that doesn't count. Yeah.
There's no one there to vacation with. When I've had someone, then I go on vacation. Vacation with a significant other, to me, is always better than vacation solo. Although, you know, there's some people that do. They, like, go on singles vacation. Like, we were in Bali or Thailand. Like, if you're single, I think you go and have a... I certainly think there's that element that goes and has a good time. But at this point in my life, at 41, the idea of, like, going on vacation to pull chicks, it's like, it's a little old and sad. I'd much rather find someone to go on vacation with me.
Is that what that's about, the singles vacation? Oh, not truly the singles vacation, but if you were to go vacation by yourself with some friends, is that part of it? Like, you're going to go pull chicks while you're out there?
I think that's the only part of it. So when we were in, I guess Bali, I guess that's kind of like what the whole thing is about. Like, if you go there, any of the beaches, any of the clubs you go to, and I mean like the beach clubs, it's just like a singles, it's like a singles mixer. I guess people come from all over. People come from Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Asia. And it is, I guess they call it, there was a name for the guys. I forget what it was. It was like,
oh, like a nickname for
it? Yeah, it was like a nickname for it. But I guess that's like what it's known for. I mean, it is a whole thing over there. And like I said, if you're single, I'm sure you can have a grand old time. It's just that, you know, when you're 25, sure. But again, at my age, I feel creepy. I feel like just like a weird old dude, like milling around the pool, like, hey, ladies, like, what's up? And like, by the way, check out my kids. But like, if I was there without the kids, that would be one thing. But even then, I still think I would feel weird. Like, you're a little too old. Like, you're too old to be doing that at my age. So I got to find someone that will go on the vacations with me as opposed to going to find someone when I'm there.
This might be a me problem, but it's also a thing that I'm curious about. So it has been suggested to me by multiple people that, so my wife, she actually just left this morning. She's going to New York for a couple of days. So I'm free this weekend to do whatever I want.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, I kind of wanted to see some of these movies, but I don't want to go without her. Like, she was interested in them. And people were like, just go by yourself. And I have this really big wall of going to doing that kind of thing by myself. I don't know why. I'm an only child. I've done things by myself my whole life. Mm-hmm. But ever since I've been with my wife, who has been almost 9 years now, I mean, at least we've been together completely married for a couple, but it's weird to me to go do that kind of thing by myself. I feel exceptionally awkward.
Yeah.
Even in like a movie theater where all you're doing is sitting and watching a movie, yeah. I still feel awkward, and I feel like that's more of a me thing, but I'm curious if anyone out there or used to
feels it.
The
like,
same way.
I'm battling that. So, I mean, I was married for 16 years, together for 18. And when she was gone, when she passed, there was a weird adjustment period, 100%. But in so many other, I mean, to what you're talking about, but just it was bizarre. It took a long time to just be okay being by myself. And then like a while later, I got into a relationship and I was with someone for like a year plus. And now it's been whatever it is, 3 months or whatever. And it's still weird to have that. Like, I went grocery shopping today and like we were living together. And so just like that, like going grocery shopping is still a strange, it's a strange thing, because for the last however many months, I just got used when we went grocery shopping together. And I think you were this way too. I'm very much a partner. When I'm together with someone, that's like a full on, like most of the stuff I do with them.
Same for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And other people aren't like that. But if you're like us and you're in that, when that person's gone or that person, you know, is on vacation or that person leaves. Yeah. That's a weird thing. It's still an adjustment period for me. You know, here we are a couple months later and it's still, it's strange. You're like, oh yeah, you're doing this. It's relearning. It's like you're learning how to ride a bike again. So yeah, totally get it. And I get like, if you've been married for as long as you have, that's always bizarre. Cause me and my wife, we never took separate vacations.
Right.
If I went somewhere, she went somewhere. And yeah, that was one of there were many adjustments, but that was one of the biggest adjustments, was just realizing that, like when, like I needed to go get milk. Like, I'm like, we're out of milk. I'm like, why isn't someone getting milk?
Yeah, what do I do?
Oh yeah. I gotta go get milk. Just like basic crap like that.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you can't reach out to the person and be like, hey, like, do you have time to do this? It's just like, nope, I got to do it. Right. Like yesterday, this happened to me last night. You know, I got home and I turned on the outside light and one of the bulbs was out. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, if I was here, I'd be like, hey, Kelsey, can you go get the stepladder? We can, you know, just get where do we have the lights? And then it was just like, no, I just got to go do it.
Oh, yeah, man.
Where do we have the lights? I'll go figure it out. I don't know.
Dude, believe me, no one understands that. It was like probably 2 years before I realized that none of that stuff was going to get done unless I did it. I know that's such a weird, like, you wouldn't think it'd be that long, but I would have those thoughts. My God, why don't we have light bulbs? Because you didn't buy them, dumbass. Like my kids, hey, we're out of toilet paper. Well, son of a gun, why didn't we? Oh, yeah. Friday night, hey, you want to go see a movie? And then you realize, oh, yeah, you're going to see a movie. Yeah, I'm asking myself if I want to go see a movie.
I just wonder, it's a weird difference, because you could very, very easily and be very content with the choice of, I'm going to sit on the couch by myself or in the bed and watch a movie tonight, right?
Sure.
I haven't seen this movie. I've been wanting to see this movie. It's on TV or it's on demand on HBO. I'll watch this tonight and it's fine. But instead, the 5-minute drive to the movie theater and doing the exact same thing is weird.
Yeah.
And I feel like it probably shouldn't be. I understand why it is and I understand why I feel that way. But maybe I'm going to commit the next few days when Kelsey's gone, I might just go see a movie by myself. I might try to break through that wall and break through that awkward feeling of like, ooh, well, I'm just,
yeah, but
I'm,
you don't have to, you don't have to worry about it too much because she's coming back.
Well, I know, but it's still because she travels a lot. So it's one of those things where when she's gone, I can't just sit at home alone the entire time. I got to do things.
Yeah.
So I gotta break through that wall.
Yeah, I'm working on it too, like trying to find like the new normal. Hopefully, you know, it's not gonna take 2 years this time. But yeah, there is an adjustment period to being by yourself. But once you figure out that you're comfortable by yourself, it's a much better, you know, it's a much better place to be in when you can be comfortable by yourself. But I do think it is a learned process. Even watching just TV by yourself, if you're used to watching TV with someone else, like you said, it's a process. Like if you're laying there with someone else, you're doing something.
Right. You can actively talk about it, yes, or make fun of a commercial or
when
something.
When you're laying there on the couch by yourself, there's still, last night I was watching the Aaron Hernandez documentary.
Did you say something out loud to yourself?
Yeah. You'll like find yourself and you're like, oh God. Yeah. One of your kids comes down, like they take pity on you. They're like, let's just sit down and watch. You're like, come on down.
Also, I will say, don't believe me when I say that maybe this week I'll go see a movie by myself. Those are very big famous last words. I would like to do that, but knowing me, it's going to be Sunday night and I'm going to be like, the games are over. I could go see it. No, I'm staying here.
By the way, the Aaron Hernandez documentary, can I just officially give that 2 thumbs? Meh.
Oh, really? I didn't watch it yet, so I can't have any hot takes with you, but
I was really disappointed in it. I watched it because it's 3 parts. I watched it over 2 nights and I wasn't that interested. I thought I would be but there wasn't a whole lot of, I don't know, wasn't a lot of new information. I thought they kind of, I thought they used the CTE thing to kind of dismiss it a little bit. It just didn't.
I heard that they sort of maybe painted Aaron Hernandez in a better light than he should have been painted.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I thought about that. Like, that's what I was saying. They kind of dismissed some of it. I'm like, dude, the guy was a horrific human being.
Yeah.
But it was the only part that was strange was listening to, like, the prison conversations. Dude, he really thought that he was fine. He thought he was getting out and thought that he was at least, he had convinced himself that he was innocent. That was the only weird part. And then like the film, like the, after the murder, like him and his buddies, like the next day, like hanging out in the basement, like just like playing with the kid. That was kind of weird, but I was pretty fired up about that. And I kind of came away with, I don't know if it's worth the, if you're interested in the story, it's worthwhile. Like my kid's doing a thing on CTE in school. So we kind of sat down and she was like, hey, let's watch it. And so we ended up watching 2 of the 3 together. But overall, the cat one, the Don't F with Cats, was way better than the Aaron Hernandez thing. So if you're sitting there like between the two, watch the it's called Don't F with Cats. And it's about like hunting like a Facebook group that ended up hunting down a killer. That was way more interesting than the Aaron Hernandez killer thing.
Well, Rob suggested those the other day, so I'm sure he will discuss those when he gets back next week. We got Joey Harrington on the show today, every Friday, as always, at 5:30. A couple of segments with him coming there. He's going to have to be on the phone tonight, though, so it'll be a phoned-in Joey Harrington interview. We got a lot of NFL playoff stuff to talk about today. Obviously, the conference championship game is coming up on Sunday. I'm curious about the social media effect on how we view sports in light of the MLB scandal that's been happening, because so much of it is taking place on social media. So we'll get to that, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. And then, of course, the club in the 6 o'clock hour. Lots of good stuff to get to today here on Primetime with Lynch and Suk today on 1080 The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the radio.com app
on 1080 The Fan.
The AAA heating and cooling poll question of the day is related to the NFL playoff games this Sunday. Go to AAAIAQ.com to learn more. Which head coach is showing the most promise / will have the best career? Kyle Shanahan, Mike Vrabel, or Matt LaFleur? All new coaches into the playoffs at this point, or young coaches into the playoffs. So of those three, those are your options. You can vote on 1080thefan.com on the right side of the page. Currently leading the way with 67% of the vote is Kyle Shanahan of your San Francisco 49ers.
I do think right now if I had to pick, the 49ers, I think, would win the Super Bowl. I think they're the best team, and they're completely healthy. I think all year long when they've been healthy, they've been the best team in the NFL. They hit that weird stretch there where, you know, they had a lot of guys that were beat up, and they haven't been healthy all year long, but you know, they're rounding into form right now, and we'll see. And not like Green Bay is, you know, anything to sneeze at, but I don't know. I just think we're giving Green Bay too much credit. I think people are dismissing that first game that they played. that front is just ridiculous. I think Garoppolo is better than people give him credit for. I think Kittle is the new Gronkowski. I think he's the toughest matchup in the NFL. He's by far, to me, the most complete tight end. They have a good run game, good O-line. There's just not many weaknesses. When they're healthy, I get Garoppolo isn't, you know, Drew Brees in his prime or Tom Brady, but we act like Garoppolo is you know, just like chopped liver. I just find me a weakness on this San Francisco team, because when they're healthy, I don't think they really have one.
We'll dive into the game specifics a little bit more in the 4 o'clock hour, and then again with Joey Harrington in the 5:30 and 5:45 segments. But in terms of the coaches, though, it appears as if most people will agree with Kyle Shanahan, right? 67% of the people saying that he's showing the most promise at this point early in his career. I just wonder about the other two. And I think it's pretty easy to see. Yeah, Shanahan's a good coach. He came from a good coaching tree. He was considered a great coordinator when he took the job with the Niners.
He was a whiz kid, right? Yeah. He's the guy. He's Sean McVay, right? I mean, everyone loved him. He was supposed to do this. He didn't come out of nowhere. Whereas like Vrabel, I think that one maybe came as a bit of a surprise. I don't think he was anointed, even though he's young and he's a player.
Last year, I think a lot of people thought he wasn't maybe the right guy for the job. And well, this year, he makes the move from Mariota to Tannehill.
The first 6 weeks of the season, he wasn't the guy for the job.
Right.
But you make one move, and all of a sudden, your team starts playing better, and lo and behold, the guy's really smart again.
Well, also, and we talked about it last week, he had a brilliant game strategy against the Ravens.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I'm assuming him and his coordinators, of course, but, I mean, it was his team strategy to play the soft defense they did against Baltimore, let them gain yards, but kill time off the clock. And, I mean, let's be honest, the Titans aren't that good, right? But yet here they are in the AFC title game. They're using a really good strategy, a really hot running back, and doing just enough with Tannehill. So I think Vrabel needs to be getting a lot of credit too, more than I've seen him get in terms of maybe being one of the better young minds in this coaching game at this point.
Yeah, it's tough to know. It's like we make so much about small samples, and we do it with quarterbacks. We do it with coaches. I mean, I guess we do it with everybody, but you know, it's like if you're the new flavor of the month and you've got a little success going, then you're a genius until you're not, right? So a year ago at this point, Sean McVay was literally the greatest thing known to man. Like if he farted on you at one point, like he gave you the Clay Helton and Sicanic treatment, then you were getting a head coaching job.
Yeah.
But right now it's like, do we talk about Sean McVay as if he's a genius? No, like he's the exact same coach, right? Nothing's changed. They didn't have as much success. The team wasn't as good. Right. So last year, San Francisco certainly wasn't in this position. And we weren't talking about Kyle Shanahan as, you know, the best young coach in football. So it's just it's very much results oriented in a very short period of time. Whereas if you win a Super Bowl, then you're almost without criticism. Right. Sean Payton won a Super Bowl, and it doesn't seem to matter how many times he bows out of the playoffs. No one says anything about Sean Payton. It's like he puts up the ring on the middle finger and is like, F you. Whereas Andy Reid, who's one of the best coaches I think that's come along the NFL in decades. What do we talk about with Andy Reid? We talk about his failures, right? Or if you want to talk about like Schottenheimer, and you know, Dan Reeves had this for a long time. It's like we completely throw out any success they've had because they've never won. Same thing with quarterbacks, right? You win a Super Bowl, instantly you're put into some sort of class, but Trent Dilfer isn't as good as Dan Marino, but Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Dan Marino didn't. But somehow we use that as the end all, the be all.
Something that I like to do when I'm trying to gauge these coaches when they're starting their careers is just look at what they've done with what they have at their disposal, right? So Sean McVay had a really good team last year mm-hmm. at his disposal, and he looked brilliant, right? He had a good offense. It was unique. It was different. But we all loved McVay, but you had to also know and attribute some of his success to the fact that the Rams were built in a really smart way.
Mm-hmm. But they weren't really built in a smart way. They were built in a way that was win now and screw the future. And
for last season, it was very well-built team.
We thought the Rams were going to have a short window. I just don't think anyone expected it to be this short. And you know what the biggest thing? One, their O-line got old and fell apart. And the other one is Todd Gurley's knees went. When Todd Gurley was an MVP, people forget. And this, again, going back to how short our memory is in the NFL, through what, 12 weeks, 13 weeks last year, who was the best player in the NFL? It was Todd Gurley.
He was unstoppable.
He was a machine. He was Derrick Henry and then some right now. And then towards the end of the year, for some unknown reason, you know, whether you think it's the knees or not, right? Todd Gurley, he just kind of faded. And then we didn't know what was wrong with him. And he, you know, in the playoffs, he was splitting carries with CJ Anderson. And then we come to this year. And can anyone tell me what Todd Gurley did this year?
Basically nothing.
You know.
He was hurt a lot. And when he did play, he barely touched the ball. He didn't get a lot of carry. He had a couple of good games, but that's it.
Yeah. Like there were brief moments where, remember that Todd Gurley, people were like, oh my God, is this, you know, hey, what's with the Rams? Well, Todd Gurley's running the ball again. And so people get all, again, excited about it. Well, this is the name. We love Derrick Henry right now. And we love the Tennessee Titans. Derrick Henry could come back next year and fall off a cliff, pull a Steve Slayton. And you're like, well, what's wrong with the Titans? Well, for whatever reason, Derrick Henry isn't running the ball. You know, Baltimore couldn't be stopped until they could. The NFL is not set up to be the New England Patriots. It just isn't. And that window can be so, so small. And yet we want to make sweeping judgments based on 8 to 10 games, based on young coaches. Well, if you want to know who the best young coach is, give it five, 6 years. And let's take a step back and look at it. And then
I want to know now, Suk. I want to have hot opinions and takes now.
And then figure out, you know, where it's going. Like maybe in 5 years we look at Sean McVay and be like, he revamped this thing and they had the one down year and then they kind of had a resurrection. Or we may look at Sean McVay and be like, well, he was Icky Woods, right? He was a one-hit wonder and never got back on top. You just don't know.
But my whole point was I try to make a gauge of these guys by seeing who is having a lot of success when it doesn't appear like they should be having a lot of success, right? So Matt LaFleur is doing very well in Green Bay record-wise, right? They won a lot of games.
But don't look that
impressive. And you've got a great quarterback, and you've got a good running back, and you've got one of the best receivers in the game. So to me, although I think LaFleur is doing obviously a great job in his first year, I sit there and go, well, let's give it a few years to see if he's actually that good. Mm-hmm. Kyle Shanahan, I say something very similar. Defensively, I mean, you've got the best defense in the NFL when healthy.
Well, and to your point there, like you just mentioned the defense. Did Kyle Shanahan, well, maybe he did because I know he works hand in hand with John Lynch, but did he draft the four guys up front? Did he make a trade for Dee Ford?
I'm sure he had some say in it.
But yeah. I promise you that if you got rid of Dee Ford, DeForest Buckner, Armstead, Bosa, if you got rid of them, Kyle Shanahan doesn't look as smart. So this is the other one about coaches too. I'm not going to say that like it's 90%, but a huge hunk of whether you're successful or not as a head coach is what your GM gives you, right? The Titans gave Vrabel Marcus Mariota. Well, he wasn't good with Marcus, but they also gave him Ryan Tannehill as a backup, and he made the decision to go with Tannehill, and all of a sudden he looks like a genius. What if they hadn't given him Tannehill? So we can all be in love with Vrabel right now, but had they not given him Ryan Tannehill and you're sitting there with Marcus right now, they're not even in the postseason. We're not talking about him this way.
But they are.
You know,
and
Sean,
that's why but that's the difference, right? So that's why I say, and I'm leaning towards Vrabel on this answer for if I'm voting for the poll question, is because he's shown me that he knows how to win with a team that's been facing a ton of adversity. He made the right switch at the right time. He's calling the right game plan at the right time. That gives me more hope that he will have longer-term success than, say, a Matt LaFleur at this point. Now, you're right. Over 5 years, we'll know a lot more about these guys. But if we were choosing at this point, that's why I'm looking at it and saying, I think Vrabel right now is showing me the most promise because of what he's been given and how he's gotten to this point.
And I won't, because I'll go with Kyle Shanahan, because I don't think the Titans are that good. I just don't. And this isn't – I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about going forward. If you're asking me to buy futures, because your coach is only going to be graded on what you do as a team. So if I've got to take futures here and I say of the four teams left, who is going to it 5 years from now, or let's say 3 years, because it's such a small window in the NFL. Kansas City and San Francisco will still be there. Green Bay and Tennessee, I don't know. So and Andy Reid obviously isn't a young coach, so you take Andy Reid out of it. Kansas City, by the way, has got a chance here to be the new New England. For the next 4 or 5 years, Kansas City's got a chance to be here every year in the AFC title game. Baltimore may have something to do with that, but Kansas City isn't going anywhere. And I don't think San Francisco is going anywhere either. Garoppolo is going to continue to get better, and that team is built for the next couple years to be really, really good. So by that metric, just off of where the teams are going to be successful, San Francisco will be more successful going forward than Tennessee will. So I'm squarely in the camp of one Kyle Shanahan. Does that mean he's a better coach than Vrabel? No. But he'll be judged better because San Francisco will be better than Tennessee over the next couple of years.
Here's your AAA heating and cooling poll question on 1080thefan.com. AAAIAQ.com is where you can find them. Coming up next, I want to have a conversation about the effect that social media has had on, I guess, sports as a whole, but it's in a more narrow light looking at the MLB scandal that's been basically unfolding on social media, and a little bit of the NBA too. How good and bad is social media for how we consume sports, how we judge sports, and how we learn about what's going on in those sports? That's next here on Primetime with Lynch and Suk today. But first, a Sports Center update.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Lynch and Suk with you today on Primetime until 7 o'clock. Rop is out. We'll all be back on Monday, though, despite the holiday, as we will be here to react to the conference championship games. We'll get to those in the 4 o'clock hour. Joey Harrington coming up at 5:30, as he does every single Friday. But I've been kind of noodling around with this over the last couple of days, and I think the best thing that could have happened to the sport of baseball was for this MLB scandal to happen on social media the way it's been happening. And the reason I say that is because I think the NBA is so successful with the younger generation because on social media, the NBA is huge, right? A great example is Worldwide Wob, that Twitter handle where he shares all the funny videos and he makes commentary and stuff during the NBA season. It really galvanizes NBA fans on Twitter and gets them all talking. And every single night, even if it's a random game between two teams you don't care about, there's something interesting to talk about in the NBA. I feel like we've talked about this guy on the show before, but I feel like John Boy with baseball is very, very similarly doing what Wob does for the NBA. And what he's done with this scandal and what has kind of made other people do with this scandal has really, really made it so much more interesting to talk about. It's not behind the scenes. We're not waiting for just the investigation to find out all the details. Everything's in front of us. Everyone's talking about it. And it's making the sport, I mean, I love baseball anyway, but I feel like it's making the sport more approachable for people generally who are paying attention on social media. I feel like even though the scandal sucks and it's bad for baseball, I feel like it's also kind of good for baseball. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're saying that it's the old any press is good press.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I would take a slightly different view on it because I think while I do agree with what you're saying is that it makes it more accessible and you do hear more about it as opposed to waiting for major news stories or developments.
You have conversations with people about it because it's all there on social media.
Sure, but it's also, I think, really dangerous because if all you do is get your information in snippets, boy, that can be such an incomplete and honestly such a so much speculation. It's like with the confetti thing. Who was it? Reddick, right?
That Josh
had
Reddick,
Josh Reddick that had the little piece of confetti on his chest. And someone on social media literally just said, hey, could this be it? Didn't say this is a buzzer. Just said, hey, could this be it? I saw that tweet and it had like something ridiculous, like 20,000 retweets. Like that thing got spread around like a Nickelback concert. I mean, that thing was everywhere. And how many people, that's all they saw was that snippet, right? And they're like, well, that could be it. And then that person makes up in their mind that that's what it is. And then if you don't see the fact that his wife came out and was like, hey, jackasses, that's a piece of confetti. And now we all know that it's a piece of confetti. That story has made it around the baseball community, I don't know, 1,000 different times. And while you and me have seen that it's clearly a piece of confetti, how many other people out there haven't? How many other people out there right now have it in their mind of, well, you know, no, I saw the proof. I saw the Altuve video and I saw the Reddit clip. So clearly there was buzzers underneath people's jerseys. And this is the same thing like Facebook was dealing with like the political elections.
Like the fake advertisements and stuff.
Yeah, right. All I need is one fake video to make its way around a couple hundred thousand times. And how many people that video will ever be their truth? Even if you come back and they post a rebuttal to it or it gets debunked, how many people have already made up their mind? So while I do think that it makes it more accessible and it can make it more interesting and you can have that conversation, I also think it's really, really dangerous that for a lot of people, this is how you consume your news. Like we had Scott Brosius's kid, right? So Scott Brosius's son yesterday
on Instagram
to the public, he was sending it to a friend and then his friend ended up putting it out there or someone reposted their conversation. And he said, well, my dad was the third base coach for the Mariners. And we all know that Mike Trout's on HGH because there's a loophole and Major League Baseball doesn't want to acknowledge it. That was trending on Twitter hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people saw that. And then I would also make, and then we talked about it on the air.
Yep.
And so when, and how
you
many
guys looked up his head and like, oh, clearly on HGH.
Exactly.
Look at how big his head is.
So how many other people heard that on sports talk radio or heard someone mention it? Dude, that reached millions of people. And all that was based on was the simple fact that a former Major League Baseball player and now like a third base coach's son said, well, I think that Mike Trout's on HGH. And now there are a ton of people that will take that as either gospel truth or at least a very real probability that that's real. Now, granted, we had fun with it. We were laughing about it. And that's fine.
And it might be true.
And it might be true. It might not be.
We don't know.
But that's my point is it's now like we were joking about it that this is what we do. And we do it tongue in cheek. But it's today it's just let's throw as much S as we can against the wall. And if it sticks, great. And if it doesn't, who cares? That's honestly the mentality that we've taken now is it doesn't really matter whether you're right. It just matters whether or not you're first or whether or not you're entertaining or you get clicks.
Now, I will agree with you that it is a dangerous precipice to be walking down, especially with the political ramifications of it. I won't deny that at all. But we could, I think, pretty clearly say that is way more important than what's happening in sports, right?
Yeah.
What's happening in the political landscape, whatever side you're on with the election, all that stuff, it's important, right? It matters for the future of the country and the world in many ways. Whereas this, it matters, but it really doesn't, right? Like in the grand scheme of things, let's say that the Mike Trout thing is real,
sure.
Right? Does it really matter in the grand scheme of things that Mike Trout took HGH? I mean, it sucks for baseball fans who love the player, right? You're like, oh my God, you played so well, but you were using a banned substance or there was a loophole or whatever. But generally, it doesn't matter, right? And that's why I think in this instance, I'm okay with that being a part of this whole craziness that's going on with, at least in the scandal, if we want to, again, narrow it down to that, because it just makes it fun. There's going to be misinformation out there, of course. There's people who still don't believe that the Astros cheated at all.
Yeah.
You'll look at posts and say, oh, you're another one of those. I guess I'll unfollow you. And it's like, well, the MLB proved that they cheated, but even they are still denying it. Because it's in sports, I feel like it's okay to have a little bit of the misinformation out there because it just creates more of that fun discussion. And someone can go in and, hey, by the way, did you miss it? This was confetti. I understand the dangerous precipice, but I think I'm okay with it in this instance.
See, and it just scares the hell out of me. And not in the, I guess this, the Major League Baseball thing doesn't necessarily scare me, but the fact that it's bleeding into every aspect of life, the thing that scares me more than anything else is that honest, I just don't know if the truth matters anymore. I really don't. It was the Liberty Valance thing, right? When the legend becomes the truth, print the legend, right? Like it's an old Western movie. If you don't get the reference, look it up, right? Guy shoots someone, didn't really do it, but that legend kind of grows and he just kind of learns to embrace it. And it becomes basically the legend becomes the truth. And I feel like that's a real, we're living in a real dangerous time that whether it's sports, whether it's politics, whether it's just society in general, you know, TMZ or whatever, you know, just social media in general.
I mean, people can make videos, the deep fakes that make it look like anyone's doing something.
Yes. You know? And just,
yeah, it is scary.
And just in general, it moves so fast now and it can be so damaging. It can be 100% fake and it really doesn't matter. And then the other scary part to it is you can get caught doing something and still have this weird sort of denial where you're like, no, that didn't happen. And they're like, well, yeah, it did. We've got you. We've got it. No, I'm just going to continue to deny until absolutely there's no denial left. That worries me. It troubles me a bit that it's almost like I'm not going to say the Me Too things. I think Me Too was actually a pretty good. Well, it wasn't pretty good. It was a very good thing, right? Those people needed to be outed.
Yeah.
But so Me Too wasn't the right word. Outrage culture, right? Where now it's like whether there's any sort of due process or not. If we get enough people that yell loud enough, it's like, well, you should be fired no matter what you do. Well, I don't like what you do. And I'm going to get enough people together, whether you actually did it or not. And we're just going to yell and scream until we get what we want.
Cancel culture.
Yeah. It's that stuff is kind of, it's scary.
Look, I'm not denying it's scary. And I don't want this to come across as like, I'm okay with there not being real facts out there. Just as a baseball fan, I thought it was so fun yesterday. And then I thought it brought so much attention to the sport that I think desperately needs attention that because of that, I was like, you know, I know some of this is fake, or at least some, it's not fake, but it's being spread around as if it's true, even though it might not be. It's just questioned, right? Like the Reddit post was, not sure if this is actually this, but what is this thing on his chest, right? Yeah. It was an innocent question that got spread around.
And it's just, and I guess it's not someone's fault for asking the question. It's people's fault for being so dumb that you take a question and then it's true.
Right.
Someone asked a question and before you could blink, there were so many people that were like, well, I saw it. It's true. Well, no, you just saw the quickest, you know, the quickest little snippet you could.
You didn't read into it.
You didn't read into it. You're just like, well, that's the truth because I don't have time because I'm going to move on to something else. I got something else on Snapchat. We're just moving so fast now that that's where I said it's almost like the truth doesn't matter. And the asteroid one doesn't bother me as much because they were cheating bastards, right? That's been proven. The Mike Trout thing, like Mike Trout will be fine. This doesn't derail him or anything, but it would bum me out if I'm Mike Trout and all of a sudden I've got people that are like, well, Mike Trout's on HGH. Well, my head's big or, you know, I don't know, maybe I've gained some weight and there was this sort of rumor. And I'm not saying it's the exact same thing, but it's like when we did that stupid, we did that dumb video, right? Where we were talking about blocking the parking lot, right? And Rop made the comment about putting the rope up, right?
Yes.
In the parking lot. Clearly, we were joking because also in that same clip, I talked about having attack badgers in a pit of snakes, right? And
real deterrence, by the way.
Real deterrence, right? Yeah, clearly. Like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out there and just get a pit of snakes. But there were people that were like, no, they want to injure bikers. You know, like, no. They didn't read any of the...
There was no context.
There was no context to it. No one saw the video. They just saw a headline that said, you know, radio host. And by the way, I'm not trying to throw anyone in the bus. I didn't even say it, right? Rob said it, clearly in a joking manner. But it wasn't Rob said something. What was it? It was local radio hosts. So I had people coming to the window yelling at me. And I was like, first off, I ride my bike. So I'm one of you. Second, I didn't say it. And thirdly, we already apologized for it because clearly it was a joke. And yet we had people that wanted like a, you know, like literally wanted us to be fired or wanted to fight me. Or wanted to come to the window and like flip me off and just be so angry. And that's what I'm saying. It's really quite frightening how easy it is to have something that's inaccurate or just it can be 100% totally false or a small sliver of a story taken out of context that becomes the truth.
I think that's a fair point. You know, like I said, I tend to agree with that. I don't love the outrage culture. I don't love the cancel culture. I don't think it really has much of a place because generally it does more hurt than good. Sometimes it does good. I mean, we can be honest. You're right. The Me Too movement, right? It outed a bunch of these people and it was
a really good thing.
It was in part of this culture and that's great, right? You got some of those people, you know, out from the shadows and into the light and all their misdeeds were shown to us and we could, you know, then say, oh my God, that person's terrible. Get him out of there.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that's ever going to, is it going to stop? Are we going to be able to stop that now? Or is the train moving too fast that it's like,
and that's the part that scares me. I'm not like
I don't want to stop enjoying what I'm enjoying because I'm worried about the cancel culture or the outrage culture then coming up because it's like that it exists now. It's an undercurrent.
I try not to be a fear monger and like bang the drum of, oh, it's only going to get worse. But it does frighten me a little bit that how bad it is now. And I don't know how the genie goes back in the bottle. Right. How do you put that back in and does it become worse or do you see the backlash go the other way and do we reach a point where, you know, people are so tired of this that, and I do think you see some of this, I'm not trying to get political at all, but I do think you see some of it where people are so tired of this that even when someone does something that is clearly wrong or you would think, hey, this, you know, there's real evidence of this. People are like, I don't care. I'm not going to believe it. And so you get a double-edged sword of you take something that shouldn't be believed and you get a ton of people believing it and you can go the exact opposite way. The pendulum swings back the other way and you're something that you should believe and something you should listen to and there's real evidence of and people just bury their head in the sand and be like, nah, I don't buy it. You know, and it's creating this weird sort of ignorance is bliss sort of utopia. And that scares the living bejesus out of me that if that's where it's at now and social media is a very new thing, we're talking about like less than a decade, right? from the rise of all this with Facebook, Twitter, and you know,
the explosion of it.
You know, where do we go 10 years from now? It's a legitimate. Oh, it's a legitimate worry.
Fan text line's 55305. I do want to slightly spin this back towards the sports side of it just for the next segment, because although the misinformation is out there, and although I did say sometimes to me it doesn't matter because at least I know I'm doing the research, so maybe that's why it doesn't matter to me as much. I still think this kind of thing that we're talking about here with the spread of the videos and all the tweets and all the sharing, it's great for the sport.
Sure.
It is. So we'll get to a little bit more of that next to wrap up the first hour. This is Primetime with Lynch and Suk today on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Lynch and Suk today on Primetime, bringing you till 7 o'clock. Joey Harrington coming up at 5:30 like he does every single Friday. We'll get to the NFL playoffs here in the next hour before In the News. Talking a little bit about social media's effect on sports, as well as last segment took us on the larger scale as well. But I did want to get it back to the sports angle before we wrap up this first hour. And I think every sport should be trying to either have fans do this or trying to mimic what the NBA and MLB in this instance have been able to do by creating buzz using social media. I think the NBA has been the king of this. Like I mentioned in the last segment, Wob was the one who led it, but there's a huge, huge impression of or large group of people on Twitter who follow the NBA every night, and they watch all the games on League Pass, and it's just a fun place to be. Crazy sometimes, but fun place to be when you're watching games. I think in baseball, it's becoming that way with the John Boy stuff, and there's like Cespedes Barbecue. There's a bunch of accounts that share funny videos and stuff that are happening every single night. I don't see a ton of this in the NFL. I think the NFL is big enough where that doesn't really matter. That in terms of getting eyeballs on the screen, and the NHL, I see none of it. So I just feel like this is such a brilliant way to get more people, especially the young crowd, which all the sports are clamoring for, to pay more attention to your sport, is to kind of maybe hold up these people who share your content on a pedestal and kind of help them disseminate these videos and clips, because it just makes it way more fun to watch on a daily basis.
Well, they're the new rock stars, you know, whether, and the olds may not like it. You know, and I guess I have a presence on social media. I don't, you know, I have an Instagram page that I post to a handful of times a year. I have a Twitter, you know, thing that
you tweet.
I tweet, but I'm not very active on there. Right. I try to make an effort for the sake of the show. And, you know, you try to be interactive with the listeners. I get that, because that's where people,
you do your Ask Me Anythings on there.
Yeah,
and stuff,
I try, but... right? It's a way, you know, to feel connected to an audience. And, you know, it's important because so much of the way you absorb content now is through social media. But it's a struggle for me because it's not natural, right? If I didn't have this job, I don't know if I'm on social media. I don't have a Facebook page. I don't think I would have Instagram, and I probably don't have Twitter.
But for you, you would still consume the sports the same way you always did, right?
Yes.
Because you grew up without social media to consume it with.
I grew up without it. And maybe I would have a Twitter account that, you know, I would never use, but it's a good news feed to kind of scroll through there. But this has become, you're a rock star. Like if you're on there, you know, the Darren Ravels of the world, or I guess.
Hate him or love him, but he's a good example.
Hate him or love him, but he's on there. And Darren Ravel is relevant because of Twitter. Right. When Schefter breaks something or Woads breaks something, where do you see it? You see it on Twitter.
Yep.
Right. You look at the younger generation. Boy, what do they care about more than anything? Go look at recruiting. Right. What do they care about? It's about being on the gram. How many likes do I have? How many Snapchat followers do I have? And this is the future of it. And this is the way that sports is going to be consumed. This is the way that you will now get your sports information. And it's only going to continue to do that, only continue to grow. And I hope that as it goes along, that we become more responsible with it, right? I hope that journalistic integrity doesn't completely go away simply because it's now done in, you know, 100 characters.
I do think that we've seen a pushback against some of that, I guess, for lack of a better term, fake news that's on social media, right? I mean, there are so many people who fake accounts and fake break stories, but pretty quickly they get found out and you're like, well, that's not really Adam Schefter, right? So, you know, I feel like there's a good amount of people who are fighting that just by appreciating that they have Adam Schefter on Twitter who can tell them things, or Woj with the NBA.
Sure.
So I feel like that does exist as a kind of a pushback on that in some instances, at least.
And I love the fact that you can get real time. I have my Twitter open the entire show. And during breaks, that's what I do. Like, I scroll through Twitter, because if something is going to happen live while we're on the air, it will happen on Twitter, right? I mean, granted, we have ESPN up in the background, but there's usually a game on or something. But that's where breaking news happens now. That is where you will see it first. And I'm constantly scrolling on that. I don't know. It's like, I never think about, oh, well, I should put out, you know, to me, it's more of a news feed, but I think that's just because of my age and maybe just the way I'm wired. But for so many other people, it's such an interactive platform back and forth. And I think that's where people get excited about it. People want to be closer to the story than ever. And even if they're just tweeting it at Adam Schefter, or they're tweeting at me, or tweeting at whoever, you know, whether that person ever sees or not, you tweet at me, I'll see it. Right, you tweeted Adam Schefter, you probably don't.
Yeah, he's probably not going to see it.
You're probably not going to see it, but it doesn't matter, because the person that's sending it to them, whether it's me with 15,000 people or Adam Schefter with, you know,
millions,
you're still part of the conversation, right? I'm sending that information to you, whether you see it or not. I'm involved in it, and people want to be involved more than ever before. People want to be involved, and this allows them in some sort of, I don't know, weird corner of the universe way to be involved in literally every story that happens, because I can give you my opinion.
I think my final thought on this before we move on is baseball, and I think hockey too is another sport that's constantly trying to find more viewers and grow the brand and all that kind of stuff. They're always trying to find a way to, like, what is the best way to get more people to watch? I think what you're seeing right now, it's the best way to get more people to watch.
Yeah.
You're going to get more people to pay attention to it.
Yes.
Baseball doesn't have to do anything. People are doing it for you. Just don't try to bury those people who are sharing your videos. Just allow it to happen, and you will get so many more eyeballs. And I feel like it's the best thing that could happen to that sport, which is desperately trying to get younger eyeballs, is someone like John Boy, yep, who just shares videos and puts funny commentary over it, and he's got tons of followers now. There it is.
What's the best
it's
way?
It's a gravy train.
What's the best way to become famous?
Get lucky.
Get lucky, right? Get something that goes viral. Best way to become a musician, right? Get someone to see you on YouTube, Twitter, you know, whatever, become a video game, be on Twitch, right? It's, yep, you're right. It is the easiest and right now probably the best way to spread your message is to have it go,
especially to the young audience.
Yes, to go viral on social media.
All right, that's it for hour number one. If you missed any of it, Let's Show Up Tire podcast will be up of this hour pretty shortly, actually. Coming up next hour, we'll have In the News at 4:30, but let's dive into the NFL playoff games of the weekend. Suke already alluded to it a little bit, but I wanted to have a little bit of a conversation about Andy Reid and the way that we view him based on his, I wouldn't say failures, but lack of playoff success. So we'll start there with the Chiefs and Packers game. That's next here on Primetime with Lynch and Suke today on 1080 The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.